Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
If you want to know the inside scoop on Axel Foley or Beetlejuice, did Ellen Ripley meet Marty McFly? And can the Terminator ever die? Bands and Masek, they have the facts about everything from decades past. Mind-blowing news that you can't totally grasp on the All 80s
Movies Podcast.
Yeah!
Hello, and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast. Podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Bant, and along with me on this journey revisiting 80s movies is my co-host, Jason Masick. Hello, Jason.
Bill Bant, I think they sent me to the wrong place.
Uh-huh.
See, I did join the army, but I joined a different army. I joined the one with the condos and the private rooms.
That's right, listeners. We are discussing, with spoilers aplenty, the 1980 military comedy Private Benjamin, distributed by Warner Brothers. It stars Goldie Hawn, Eileen Brennan, and Armand DeSante. Directed by Howard Seif, this movie is rated R with a running time of 1 hour and 49 minutes. This movie was nominated for 3 Oscars: Best Actress in a Leading Role for Goldie Hawn, Best Actress in a Supporting Role for Eileen Brennan, and Best Writing Screenplay Written Directly for the Screen. So, what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local video store to rent this movie, you would find this description on the back of the VHS box. It is What's on the Box. Take it away, Jason.
Drop an immovable object into the path of an irresistible force, and the results can be explosive and explosively funny. Private Benjamin's immovable object is pampered upper-middle-class Judy Benjamin, widowed on her wedding night. The irresistible force is a 3-year all-expenses-paid hitch in the U.S. Army. What's a nice girl like Judy doing in combat boots and fatigues? A recruiter seductively describes today's new army, and vulnerable Judy swallows the bait. Academy Award winner Goldie Hawn is a private first class in her Oscar-nominated role of Judy, a fish-out-of-water, coming-of-age via the rigors of basic training and European adventures that test her new independence. Also top-notch are Robert Webber, Mary Kay Place, Albert Brooks, and Eileen Brennan, also an Oscar nominee and Emmy winner for the TV series this movie inspired. At ease, troops. Laughter is guaranteed. Private Benjamin.
Private Benjamin. Jason, how are we doing?
We're doing excellent, Bill Bant. You ready to dive into this oldie but goodie from 1980?
Yes, I am. But first, if you listen to our episodes, you might have noticed something a little bit different in the beginning. I just want to thank one of our listeners for sending us that intro. It's just a one-off, but it was just really cool. Jason and I really enjoyed it, so thank you. The person that made and sent it to us, they want to remain anonymous, so appreciate you sending that out to us. It was really funny. We really enjoyed it, and I hope you get a kick out of it that we put it on the beginning of this episode.
Absolutely, 100,000 million trillion percent. It's hilarious. It's amazing. It's perfect and appropriate. It is our podcast. I mean, it is a wonderful theme song, so happy to play it. Thank you for sending it in. Amazing. Great work.
All right. All right, so we're talking about Private Benjamin, and as always, we start with earliest memories. Jason, what are your earliest memories of Private Benjamin?
All right, Bill Bant, I'll tell you, my earliest memories of Private Benjamin are nada. That's nothing. I missed this one, man, and it was unfortunate because I've always heard about it over the years, but I have never seen this film. All I can tell you about are my earliest memories of Goldie Hawn, or probably kind of just earliest thoughts about Goldie Hawn. I was aware of her, of course. I did watch Laugh-In, at least the reruns, and she was great. She's bubbly. She's cute. She's funny. And she's alluring, like kind of seductive in her kind of cute and funny way. I've always enjoyed Goldie Hawn. I thought she was kind of crazy like a fox. Very, very smart comedian in the way that she could play a little bit of that ditzy blonde, but she's just so good at it. And then in the later 80s, of course, Overboard was a family favorite and a fan favorite. It was popular in our household. I believe my sister and I would watch it quite often. And of course, growing up, I was aware of her relationship to Kurt Russell because, as you know, listeners, we are big Kurt Russell fans here on this podcast. I certainly am, of course. So yeah, I mean, I always have been a fan of and respected their relationship. Not that I know the inner workings of the relationship. I do not know Goldie Hawn or Kurt Russell personally, of course, unfortunately. But it's just kind of cool. They've never been married, but they've just stuck it out and they've been together and they've been there for each other since, I think according to the research, 1983, if I'm not mistaken, technically. They met before that, though, of course. And yeah, I was aware that this particular movie, Private Benjamin, is revered as a classic comedy, and that it's one of Goldie Hawn's great performances. And that's all I'm going to say. So I was looking forward to seeing what this was all about, Bill Bandt. What are your earliest memories of this film?
Yeah, so my earliest memories of this movie is my parents watching it for the first time. So this came out in 80. So they were watching on HBO, so it was probably 81 or 82. And I kind of remember watching the beginning where we have the big wedding scene, and then we have Judy Benjamin, who's married now to Yale, who was Albert Brooks. And I got to talk about that later. I still can't believe that was him. And they have the scene when they're making love and he dies. He has a heart attack. And I remember asking my parents what had happened, and they kind of didn't want to tell me. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, did he choke on something and die? So I gave my parents the out right there. And they're like, oh, perfect. yeah, he choked and died. He choked and died. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I remember watching, of course, the shower scene with Captain Lewis when she gets the blue ink all over her. Mm-hmm. The War Games. And then that was about it, because it was probably one of those bedtime, and I never saw the second half of the movie. And then probably in the late 80s, I finally watched the full movie, and I remember liking the first half when Goldie Hawn as Private Benjamin is in basic training, and then not really caring what happened after that. Mm-hmm. So I have not seen this movie since then, so I was interested to see, now being older and understanding more what the movie's about, going back and watching it and seeing if I'll actually appreciate the second half of the film.
There you go. I love it. Man, I love when you tell those stories of your early childhood watching these movies with your parents. We've all been there. It's so relatable where you watch some of these movies and these awkward moments come up where they might be slightly inappropriate depending on your age, and the parents have to deal with it or cover your eyes or earmuffs or whatever it might be. But yeah, I appreciate that. But it's interesting. Yes, as we will get into this, it is a tale of two halves, this particular movie.
Yeah, definitely it is. So what are your initial thoughts, Jason, watching this for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it. And let me just talk about our star, our protagonist, our Oscar nominee from this film. That is the one and only Goldie Hawn as Private Judy Benjamin. Her filmography goes all the way back to the 60s. And she, of course, was in Cactus Flower in 1969, which did win her the Academy Award and Golden Globe Award for Best Supporting Actress. Then she went on to do 60 episodes of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In from 68 to 70. Her 70s, in a quick snapshot, she did Shampoo in 75, Foul Play with Chevy Chase in 78. And then into the 80s, we have this, obviously Private Benjamin, then Wildcats and Overboard. And into the 90s, we get into Bird on a Wire with Mel Gibson. I remember seeing trailers for that all the time, and I still have never seen that film. She went on to do Deceived, Death Becomes Her. That I've seen. That's great. In 92, The First Wives Club, The Out-of-Towners, The Banger Sisters. And most recently, she's been in those huge Netflix holiday movies with a longtime life partner, Kurt Russell, The Christmas Chronicles and The Christmas Chronicles Part 2. Those came out in 2018 and 2020, respectively. Goldie Hawn, now 78 years old, mother of Oliver Hudson, Kate Hudson, and Wyatt Russell, all in the biz, if you will. And yes, been in that relationship with Kurt Russell since 83. Love Goldie Hawn. Still doing it. Still amazing. So, this is a movie about a woman who loses her husband on her wedding night. We've talked about it a little bit in the What's on the Box segment. Bill Bandt described it a little bit. But yes, She loses her husband, Albert Brooks, otherwise known as Yale Goodman, while making love. He has a heart attack when he is coming to fruition, if you will. And after he passes, she discovers she has no purpose or independence, and she is conned into joining the army. And throughout, we see that she's consistently treated abusively by the men in her life, whether it be her husband or senior in command or her father. And upon graduating from basic training, she takes a post outside Paris, where she enters into another relationship with a man who is manipulative and deceitful. And she becomes aware of this pattern of being in unhealthy relationships, and she leaves him, and that's it. There you go. That's it in a nutshell, in case you didn't get it from the What's on the Box synopsis. But this, for me, is clearly a premise movie. It's a situational comedy. The comedy ends up completely relying upon Goldie Hawn. And the bulk of what are supposed to be like the comedic situations take place within her basic training scenes. And those take place in Biloxi, Mississippi, in the fiction here. But the entire 40 minutes or so that take place there in basic training are pretty simple. They're pretty goofy and pretty superficial. When I say superficial, it feels to me a little bit like an SNL sketch from the late 70s. Granted, I am watching this now as an adult for the first time in 2024. I did not watch this as a kid, so this is just kind of how I'm seeing it now. And I do understand, of course, it's 100% a comedy and not relying on authenticity, but it's pretty silly, and I didn't feel as if there were any real stakes. Anyway, can't say it enough. All of the comedy in this movie is on Goldie Hawn's shoulders, and it's just her being her. It's Goldie Hawn being Goldie Hawn, meaning she's amazing. It's her facial expressions, her reactions, her physicality in being bumbly and inept. There's some one-liners in this, I suppose. Some quotes. I didn't find it extremely quotable. I don't know of many quotes on the playground from this one. Over the years, I didn't hear many kids quoting this one. Not that kids were watching this a lot, but look, it's obvious that in this film, her character, Judy Benjamin, is a fish out of water, and it's all about watching her being awkward and a victim of circumstance. She doesn't have a great deal of agency in this. Things are just happening to her. She's reacting to things. She doesn't take action until finally, spoiler alert, it's already ruined. Sorry about that. Her parents show up to take her out of the army, or after several times of her soon-to-be husband obviously showing signs he's either pining for his ex or cheating on the or with the maid. And when Benjamin finally leaves him at the altar, it's just then at the end where we're like, oh, she's doing something about this. Goldie Hawn's character, Private Benjamin, is the only character that's fleshed out. We do have Eileen Brennan, the great Eileen Brennan, as Captain Lewis, who does carry some of the comedic weight in it. I must give her a lot of credit, actually. She is pretty darn funny and pretty darn weird, in my opinion, but that's her shtick. That's what she does. And she does serve as the main antagonist to Private Benjamin for the first half of the film. But otherwise, all the other supporting characters are just like window dressing to me. They're somewhat underused and underwritten, such as Mary Kay Place is in this as her really good friend in basic training. And there are some other big players in the supporting cast, but just not given much to do, such as the great Craig T. Nelson as Captain William Woodbridge. And he's just a bit of a goof. That's all I'm going to say. Again, giving credit to Eileen Brennan, but man, I feel like they missed a bet with her character. I feel like she could have played a bigger part in this, actually. And I'll get into that later, I believe, on either my complaints or additional thoughts, but I'll talk about it more soon. Hey, talking about supporting players, Armand Assante as French gynecologist Henri Tremont. Hey, man, I've always been a fan of Armand Assante. I love this guy. And he's got an extensive filmography. Just look it up on IMDb. But I can't really say I've seen many of his films or much of his work. All I can say is I dig this guy. He has a real presence. He has a real command. He's got that voice and that smooth delivery. And then he can just explode on you in a moment and become the most intimidating of actors. But I look over his filmography and I was trying to pinpoint exactly what grabbed me that really stood out as an Armand Assante performance. And you know what popped out at me? Was this HBO movie directed by Sidney Lumet called Q&A. And I swear, that's it. That's the movie. Which also stars Timothy Hutton and Nick Nolte. Check it out. It's pretty gritty. But he's also in The Marrying Man and Fatal Instinct and Judge Dredd, which is a terrible Sylvester Stallone movie. But Armand Assante, he's great in all of those movies. Just got to give him a shout out. I wish he was in the first half of the movie, not the second half. Here's another initial thought. There's so much smoking in this movie. It's hilarious. There's smoking everywhere, in restaurants, in bed. It's just everywhere. There's cigarette butts and ashtrays and smoking in extras' faces in this movie. It's hilarious. We don't get any 80s boobs in this. I was shocked. But what do we get, Bill Bam?
Butt cheeks.
Yes, indeed. Nailed it. There's a lot of kind of sex inserted into this movie. There's just some sexual innuendo and just kind of a lot of sex in here that seemed a little bit awkward. I don't know why it felt that way. I don't know if that was just an initial thought. I understand why it's in certain scenes. I don't know if it was totally necessary. It just felt weird to me. I'm just going to stop there. Look, I only laughed out loud once. I thought it was amusing. I don't even remember where I laughed out loud. I just feel as though this probably would have been more entertaining if I saw it as a kid. But now it just feels a little weird because there's just a lot of time kind of wasted in this movie. In the opening wedding, there's extended shots of Paris. I was pausing a lot looking at the running time and wondering where it was going because there wasn't like a lot of time left. I'm like, what are we doing here? And there's just a lot of shots of the army helicopter. I was like, oh, is this where all the budget went? So they have to show the helicopter a lot, I guess. I was wondering why it's an hour and 49 minutes long. It didn't really feel that long. I'll give it that much. It did go by relatively quickly, but I just still didn't think it needed to be that long. It's a movie of its time. It's from a different time, for sure. You know, I always talk about either what the standout was or who the standout was or what I learned. I did learn what procurement was, which is the post that Private Benjamin takes outside of Paris. She's working in procurement, the action or occupation of acquiring military equipment and supplies. I don't know if I knew what procurement actually was before. You know, if I had a nostalgic attachment to this, it might be different. My reaction might be different. This is not an awful movie. Goldie Hawn was nominated for Best Actress for a reason. And my opinion is because she's got almost nothing to work with except the basic premise and looking silly in fatigues and a helmet. So, you know what? Kudos to her. That's just my opinion. I'll end with this. I love seeing Albert Brooks in the beginning of this in his full afro. It's amazing. What are your initial thoughts, Bill Bant?
Yeah, a couple of things. Since you just mentioned Albert Brooks, I couldn't believe watching this going, wait, is that Albert Brooks? Is that really Albert Brooks? It sounds like Albert Brooks. Is it Albert Brooks? What did they do to Albert Brooks? Is he wearing some kind of makeup to make him look like that? It took me 5 minutes to really like, okay, that is Albert Brooks.
Absolutely.
I was totally shocked by that. And that's kind of cool to just have a role like that. Hey, you're just going to be in the first 10 minutes of the movie and then you're done. Sure. Why not? That sounds kind of cool. So I appreciate his cameo in that. For me, overall, it's another 80s military film that can't overcome the basic training.
Right.
You have this, you have Stripes, you have Full Metal Jacket and Heartbreak Ridge. You have this great basic training scenes or portion of the film, and it's either really funny, it's really intense, whatever it's going to be. And then once they leave basic training, the movie slides a little bit. But I was surprised with this one. This time watching it, I didn't think it was as bad. Mm-hmm. And like you, I think this movie goes really fast. I was like, wait, there's 20 minutes left in the movie already? What? So that, I agree with that it was quicker than you thought it was going to be. But I think really what they should have done is just made the whole movie about the army itself. Because another issue I have is the same with you. You had all these other characters in the troop. We knew nothing about them. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about the troop. That's what made Stripes so fun, is you knew a little bit about the other.
You got Ox.
And with this, you didn't really know anybody else. I mean, you had PJ Souls playing Private Winter, who was like the goody two-shoe military girl. And then we had Gianelli. And then she and Private Benjamin kind of had a little back and forth going, but it didn't really go anywhere. I understand the movie is about Benjamin finding her independence. And that's why you kind of had to leave basic training and go to that. But I think I just would have liked the movie if it took place during basic training and then she somehow figures out that independence at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did think at least she had an arc, because here it was, her goal in life was just to be a housewife. And she's on her second marriage and she meets the guy that meets the qualifications of what she's looking for. And in a way, this is kind of harsh, but the best thing that probably happened to her is the fact that poor Yael dies. Because I was thinking about that. I'm like, okay, say Yael doesn't die. How's her life going to be from that point on? I'm like, okay, they're probably going to have 2 to 3 kids. And Yael's never going to be home because he's working all the time. And then he's probably having an affair with someone in the office. And then kids grow up. They become empty nesters. And then he decides, you know what? I want a divorce. We're done. And then she has no one. She becomes a cat woman. And that's the end of her life. So sad. But so the best thing that happened to her was the fact that Yael passed away. What I really like, too, is that scene when everything finally clicks. I mean, she's at her lowest of the low. The troop hates her. Captain Lewis hates her. Her parents even find her to be a burden. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to move forward. I'm not going to let this happen. And there you go. So that's what really sets the arc in motion from that scene on. Yeah, the second half is slow. Not slow. It's just not as interesting as the first half to me. But I did enjoy it a little bit more this time because as a kid, you're just watching it for the laughs. And the second part, yeah, there's not very many laugh moments in it. But I actually was a little bit more interested in the story and seeing where Private Benjamin was going after she left basic training. And it does work for me, but it is weird. It almost feels like it's a tale of two movies that were just kind of stitched together. But overall, I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it.
That's good, Bill Bant. Staying positive. I really appreciate that. Yeah, and I always say this. I don't mean to be harsh, but I just got to be honest, right? And I have to say, sometimes I need to relax. I think I had some expectations going into this. I am a Goldie Hawn fan. I wanted this to be funny, and then I was disappointed. But then when I was watching it again and skimming through it and looking for favorite scenes and replaying those scenes, I was like, I can have fun with this. And just watching what Goldie Hawn does, she's just so good at it. But right, the problem with the second half is that it's not as fun. There's just not a lot of fun in it, especially for this, what's supposed to be a comedy. I mean, a big time comedy. So that was a little confounding. It's not, again, it's not terrible. Armand DeSante is the leading man in the second half of the film. He's always solid. It's just kind of a bummer, though, as far as what's going on. And it gets a little dramatic. So yeah, Tale of Two Halves. So it's interesting. This was nominated for 3 Oscars. I mean, for 2 performances, but also for the writing. Fascinating.
Yeah. And I think what's weird, too, because we keep saying two halves. Like, really, time-wise, it's the third act.
Right. It's the your final.
Yeah, third. You really almost right. Don't see it, Armand DeSante, until the third act of the film. Well, no, you mean the first time.
He pops it. Yeah, when she first meets him in New Orleans when they're on leave.
Right. But then they don't really start their relationship until the third act. So it is kind of strange.
I think we say two halves because, like you said, it feels like two different movies.
Yeah. Like I said, it would have been better off if they kept it all at the camp and then maybe he comes in as some kind of officer or there's some exchange program and he's part of a different military and then they have their fling. And then that's how she gets her independence, realizing I don't need to be with this cruel, manipulative man.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that. Again, I think that it was smart to bring Captain Lewis, Eileen Brennan's character, back into the film in the second half, but then she doesn't have a great deal to do. I thought that could have been interesting if she's continues to be the antagonist to Private Benjamin and that Benjamin really needs to overcome it because, you know, at that point, Captain Lewis really has it in for Benjamin. But maybe if Private Benjamin, because she is basically being oppressed by men throughout this, and she's trying to find her own way and her own path, and she keeps choosing the wrong man, and she's constantly being beaten down by the man, literally and figuratively. So when, I should not even figuratively, just literally, and she graduates from basic training and then goes on to this cushy post outside of Paris, maybe she comes up against an even larger antagonist in a senior officer who happens to be a man. And that's the real challenge she has to overcome in order to find her confidence and worth and esteem and independence. Or she has a relationship with a commanding officer or something like that. But it could have, you know, it's not our job to write it, but we can't help but think of ways this might have been a stronger film overall.
Right. So. All right, so let's move on to favorite scenes or moments. What are some favorite scenes and moments we had about Private Benjamin?
Absolutely. You know, I think we've established the setup or overall premise here of the movie, so I'm going to get right into my first favorite scene. And I'm calling it, well, it's a long sentence, but Judy Benjamin, Private Benjamin, pulls Captain Doreen Lewis aside for a brief sidebar during the first inspection of the all-female Alpha Company in the barracks. So we see the Captain Lewis, who is the company commander, come in into this all-female barracks, and she immediately appears to be a hard ass, albeit wearing a decent amount of makeup and heavy lipstick. And all the brand new female privates are standing at attention as the captain conducts her first inspection, and she goes over to a private that is cowering and is in tears, and she asks her if she's a crybaby. And then she goes to the next private, who happens to be the attractive private Wanda Winter, who already has her bed made neatly and tightly and her locker kept tidy. And, well, the captain's impressed with Private Winters. And then she moves on to Private Gianelli, who is by all appearances a tough girl with her fatigue top open and her bra showing. And she's in full makeup. And we find out she had a choice to either go to prison or join the army. Then as the captain is berating her, she moves on and states that she's running a tight ship and she always has the best trained and best disciplined company. And in the midst of her speech to these privates, these newbies, well, Goldie Hawn, Private Benjamin, approaches her right in the middle of the speech and politely interrupts her. And Captain Lewis turns around in shock and takes one look at her and has this great wide-eyed, wide-mouthed look on her face of, well, what do we have here? And it's because Goldie Hawn is not yet changed into her fatigues, and she's still wearing this like black dress, and she's basically still all dolled up. And Captain Lewis says, oh my lord, would you look at this? What's your name, princess? She's like, Judy Benjamin. And I'm just laughing because this was a very funny scene. And Judy Benjamin says, I think they sent me to the wrong place. And this is the opening quote that I had spoken at the beginning. Captain Doreen says, uh-huh. And she says, yeah, see, I didn't join the army, but I joined a different army. I joined the one with the condos and the private rooms. And the captain has a good laugh at this. She says, well, I'm telling you, there isn't any other army. And Benjamin replies with, wait a minute. I don't want to have to go above you to your boss or anything, okay? And the captain is smiling wide at all this and playing into it, actually. And Benjamin goes on to say, to be truthful with you, I can't sleep in a room with 20 strangers. The captain's like, oh dear. And Benjamin goes on with saying, and I mean, look at this place. The army couldn't afford drapes. I'll be up at the crack of dawn here. Judy goes on to call the barracks a sty and that the bathroom is dirty and has urinals in it. And the captain then says, do you think that the latrine is unsanitary? This army is not a sorority house. May I see your toothbrush, please? And it's a hard cut then to, of course, we have to have this scene in an army movie, right? Judy Benjamin is now cleaning the latrine with her electric toothbrush, which is actually quite funny. It's quite a funny visual. It's not just a toothbrush. It's an electric toothbrush. So I like the scene a lot. The best part is the fact that Private Benjamin, Goldie Hawn, is so incredibly naive, but so sweet in her naivete and telling the captain she's in the wrong place. And then you have Eileen Brennan, who's just so weird and demonstrative, and in her facial expressions, she's hilarious. And she's indulging Private Benjamin the whole time because she just thinks this is fascinating, hilarious as to how much Benjamin is complaining and how ignorant she is and completely oblivious to where she is, what she's doing there, and what the situation is. So both Goldie Hawn and Eileen Brennan are smiling at each other through this whole thing. Eileen Brennan's just in complete wonderment and awe of this creature in front of her who seems to be a total idiot. It's great. It's pretty fun. That scene I particularly enjoyed. Do you have any thoughts on that one, Bill Bant?
I love this scene. Eileen Brennan in this scene is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
When Ross steps away and we see Eileen Brennan just
right.
standing
I'm sorry,
there.
Bill Bant, to interrupt. I didn't mention that this whole time the drill sergeant is there too. The tall African-American drill sergeant Ross. Yeah. Yes.
When drill sergeant Ross steps away and we see Eileen Brennan there as Captain Lewis just standing there and the look on her face and she does that half salute, I started getting the giggles. And I had the giggles through the whole scene because she steals the scene 100%. To me, I think she's the funniest part of the movie, and I would have loved to have seen more in it. Because then she goes to the barracks, and one of the troops has a poster of Bob Dylan, and she goes up to him, and she's like, I understand you ladies drool over this Fonzie character, and rips it off the locker. And I was like, oh, that's just hilarious. You're just so out of touch because you're military. That's all your focus is on.
Right.
And the other part is when Goldie Hawn taps Captain Lewis on the shoulder and she turns and she kind of, like you said, that wonderment, like, why are you touching me? And she goes, what's your name? She's like, Judy. She's like, Judy, Judy Benjamin. And the way she repeats Goldie Hawn's name as Judy that's Benjamin, great. I laugh every time. I just think it's hilarious. She's just mocking her right in her face and she's not getting it.
Right.
Yeah, this scene is all Eileen Brennan. It's just like, this is what you got that nomination for. I love her in this. She's just so funny.
She's great. She's so expressive. And she's doing this thing with her lips. She wants to say so many things to Benjamin in this moment, but almost just can't get the words out. She's just flabbergasted, but she's also thinks it's hilarious at the same time. And she's wonderful. And I didn't spend the time to get into Eileen Brennan's filmography, but check her work out. She was also on Laugh-In. She was in Clue. She's great. You can find some great clips of her scenes. There's actually a supercut of her scenes on YouTube from Clue. Go back and check out Eileen's work. She's wonderful.
All right. What do we have next for favorite scenes or moments, Jason?
Yeah, I'm going to go into my next favorite scene, which is Benjamin's parents. That's Private Benjamin's parents come to take her home. So at this point in the film, Private Benjamin has had a rough go. She's gotten beat up during the entire training regimen of running and jumping and climbing and crawling and more running. And one night, she has her blanket stolen by hard-ass Private Gianelli. And when she tries to take it back, Gianelli kicks her ass. And Benjamin has had enough. So she tries to escape over a perimeter fence, but gets caught in the barbed wire and her actions cost the whole Alpha Company, as then they are marching in laps around the courtyard in the rain. And Private Benjamin continues to complain and whine and says, she doesn't want to be in the army. I don't want to be in the army. I don't want to be in the army. And the others won't abide her whining. And now they're really disliking her. When finally, Drill Sergeant Ross tells everyone to return to the barracks and tells Benjamin she's got visitors. Benjamin then walks into the recreation room to find her parents are waiting for her. Benjamin goes over to them wearing her rain-soaked gear, helmet, poncho, backpack, and looking absolutely pouty and pathetic and pitiful. And that's hilarious unto itself. It's quite the image. Her mom hugs her and kisses her cheek, and her dad kisses her on the cheek as well. But then her dad just lets her have it. He just starts laying into her, berates her for disappearing for 8 days because she didn't tell them that she had enlisted in the army, and then finds out her parents told everyone else that she went temporarily insane and that she's been in a mental home. And her dad goes on to say, haven't we done enough for you, given you everything you wanted, a car for your 16th birthday, got you into college? You were never a smart girl. We're all going to stop pretending now. You are obviously incapable of making your own decisions. Starting tomorrow, I'm not letting you out of my sight. And almost on cue, the evil Captain Lewis enters with Private Benjamin's bags already packed. And she lies to the Benjamins, her parents, and says that she's sorry things didn't work out and that she was a hard worker and popular with the other girls, none of it being true. And Captain Lewis attempts to get Judy Benjamin to sign the discharge papers. But throughout all of this conversation around and about Private Judy Benjamin, she, Judy, realizes that she doesn't want to go home. She doesn't go home to her selfish, self-loathing, condescending parents, and that she's got something to prove to herself and to the captain, and she decides not to sign the discharge paper and stays. And there's a great moment where she stands up and salutes the captain, who is now in shock. Another great moment from Eileen Brennan. And she turns to Mommy and Daddy and salutes them as well, which is kind of funny. And she leaves to go back to the barracks with her other female privates. I like this scene a lot. It's brief, but it's great because Goldie Hawn is a treasure. She's absolutely, like I said, she's pathetic. She's sitting with her mascara running and her eyes watering. She does the ultimate eye acting. Everything is in her eyes. And Goldie Hawn is known, of course, for her face and those huge blue eyes. I mean, she's got big old eyes and they're wonderful and they convey everything. And she's just eye acting this entire scene. She's playing dumbfounded, confused, sad, pitiful. And then you see it in her eyes as she finds her resolve. And the whole time, she's still playing the comedy. She's funny. She's hilarious to look at. It's the poster of the movie, is her just looking pathetic with her mascara running. That's the scene, her image in the scene, her face in the scene with her helmet on and just looking miserable. Again, not a long scene, but she's really funny and awesome to look at. That's all I can say. Goldie Hawn, she's great in this. That was my other favorite scene.
Yeah, this is a very pivotal scene because at this point, Benjamin has hit as low as you can go. She has nobody in her corner. And then here's a little ray of hope where she sees her parents and Mommy and Daddy are going to fix everything for her. And the way that her dad kind of berates her, she realizes they don't really have her back. So she really is alone and she's got to think, okay, what am I going to do? Am I going to run away and go to my parents? Or do I need to turn my life around at this moment and move forward? And she decides to turn around her life at that moment and move forward. I think it's just great. It's the eye-opening experience for her. Here she is, 28 years old, married twice, doesn't have any kind of skills whatsoever. And she's now going to take a stand and turn things around. And this is where it happens right there. So it is a really great scene. And once again, Eileen Brennan thinking, oh, good, I got rid of my biggest headache. And Private Benjamin turns around and is like, nope, I'm staying. The look on her face is, oh, my God, great.
Well said, my friend. It is the moment when Private Benjamin finds her inner strength. So it's important. It's an important scene.
Yeah. So moving on to one of my favorite scenes, and it is when Captain Lewis says goodbye to the troops. So setting up the scene is they're basically at the end of basic training, and they're doing some war games, and they divided the base into two groups, the blue group and the red group. And Captain Lewis is in charge of the blue group, and she sends Benjamin and Mary Lou Glass and Sawyer and Moe and Gianelli to go guard a swamp. And the girls get lost in the swamp. They eventually come upon the red team and hatch a plan and end up winning the war games for the blue team, which upsets Captain Lewis. So we're at this point. It's the night before basically the graduation, or the moving on ceremony, a parade, or whatever you want to call it when you finish basic training. And all the ladies are in the barracks and they're having a good time and they're dancing to some We Are Family. And even Drill Sergeant Ross comes in and he starts dancing with them and everybody's having a good time. And then in steps Captain Lewis. And we see she is clearly drunk. She takes her, I'm going to call it, she it carries like this horse whip around with her.
It's like a riding crop that she has.
It's just the things he holds around. And the radio that's playing the song is on a tape. And she literally takes the whip and just hits the radio twice to shut off the music. And everybody is a little bit startled. And Lewis then calls for an inspection and beelines it right to Private Benjamin. And she says to her, "Well, well, well, Lady Luck." And after she says that, she does like a slight curtsy to her and continues with, "Don't you look at me with those baby blues. I'm not the great Thorny." And Thorny is Colonel Clay Thornbush, who is overseeing the war games and congratulated Goldie Hawn and the other ladies for winning and takes them up in his helicopter and whisks them away. And in the meantime, kind of berates Lewis a little bit about how she handled the war games. So, of course, she's a little pissed about that. So she continues with saying, "Well, you finally succeeded in making a fool out of me, didn't you, Judy Benjamin?" And Benjamin agrees, and Captain Lewis decides that she's going to punish the troop by having them all scrub the whole barracks, top to bottom, everything. Anything that can be clean, they're going to scrub it. And then as she walks off, she literally falls. Captain Lewis falls, and one of the troops kind of picks her up, and she thanks her. And then she lets them know that she's been assigned to another post. She's like, a better post, better post. So she's trying to convince herself that, because she's obviously upset that she's being reassigned, but she's trying not to let that on. And then she leaves with this one line. When she said it, I laughed out loud. I love it, because she's like, "Let's not keep in touch, shall we?" And then she just turns around and walks away. And that line, the way she says it, just made me laugh out loud. Because you always think it would be the opposite. And then just, "I never want to see you fuckers again." That's basically just what she said to him. And then walks right out. And everyone just kind of stand there like, what just happened? And that's how the scene ends. I love her. Goodbye.
You know, the more that you describe her in these scenes, it just reinforces how great she is to me. And it is worth watching this movie for her, for sure. I mean, outside of Goldie Hawn, of course. But yeah, she's a strange one. She's so unique. I mean, strange in the best possible way. Eileen Brennan owns it. You know, when they say, how do you stand apart when you audition for something or when you play a role, which, you know, in this particular scene and under these circumstances, she's playing drunk. She's just quirky. She has strange mannerisms, but she makes it work. Eileen Brennan is very unique. I think she's pretty special in that way, where she just does certain mannerisms or physical moves, whether it be a gesture. There's one scene, it's a very brief scene with the other company commander played by Craig T. Nelson. He's coming on to her. He asks her out on a date and she kind of gives a delayed response, doesn't even say anything and honks the horn on the Jeep. And it's just weird, but she's following her own instincts that take her in unexpected directions where you're surprised. That's, I guess, the point I'm making is that watching Eileen Brennan, you're always surprised by what she does and how she delivers her lines. Good call, man. She's very funny in this particular scene when she's saying goodbye. Let's not keep in touch, shall we? Great line.
And then another moment for me, surprise, surprise, involves Eileen Brennan. After she said her goodbyes to the troops, they decide to get a little revenge on her and they get into her barracks, put some ink in her shower head and she goes to take a shower and then she has the ink all over her and gets really upset. And then the next day is the training military parade to say that they've moved on for basic training. And so she shows up at the parade and she has, it almost looks like she's got noxzema all over her face and cover all the blue ink and her lips are painted as red as they can be. And everyone's just kind of giving her the side glance like, what the hell is going on? And she tries to smile to kind of play it off. Her teeth are still stained from the blue ink, but it's not like completely, like her teeth almost look have like a marble look to them with this blue ink. And every time she opened her mouth to try to smile, oh my God, I was dying too. She is a treasure in this movie. She should have been in it way more than she was. I loved her in it.
Yeah, that's a very funny scene because she looks insane.
Yes.
And that, like, she's got 100 sunblock on.
Yes.
It's really funny. And she's just doing her best to smile. I gave her credit for showing up at the ceremony and even showing her face at all, but she sticks out.
Yeah.
Sticks out in the best possible way in this movie.
Yes, she does.
Good stuff, man.
Time to move on to Swiss Cheese and Complaint Department. Why do we call it Swiss Cheese?
Because although this movie is delicious, it does have M16 holes.
Yes, if it doesn't have those M16 holes, we just file a complaint with the Complaint Department. So Jason, what do you have for Swiss Cheese or complaints?
This is a mild complaint. I get it, but at the same time, it's pretty extreme. And yes, this is a little bit of an over-the-top comedy, so it's hard to complain about too much. We always say that with these types of comedies from the 80s, regardless. I was asking myself, why is Judy Benjamin so destitute and despondent after Yale's passing? Obviously, she's upset that her husband has passed away, but I mean, she still has her parents that are obviously wealthy. We know she could stay at Yale's house, her now deceased husband's house, but I guess she's understandably doesn't want to be in the house at this time. Now she's been living in a hotel room for 7 days and calls a call-in radio show and ends up joining the army. I don't know. For me, it was like, I feel like she needed a better reason to join up besides being simply duped by a recruitment officer. That being, whom we haven't even mentioned yet, Harry Dean Stanton's in this movie.
Yeah, kind of plays a bad guy in this.
Yeah. I have a question about him next. Anyway, I was like, she had other options. It's kind of funny when she's in the hotel room, again, destitute, and just, you know, we see the open box of pizza, and she's just completely depressed and letting it all out on this DJ at a call-in radio show. But do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, it didn't seem like she needed to be in that situation at all.
I don't know if I agree with that. She's 0-2 on marriages now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It basically states at the beginning of the movie that all Judy wants to be is a housewife. And
right.
She
yeah.
finally met the man that was going to check all those boxes for her. Even though I said if they had stayed married, it wouldn't have worked out well. So she has nothing else. She has no skills to do anything except be a wife. And now she has nothing. And she says that on the radio, like, I have never been alone in my life. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And she does not know how to deal with this. Because it's not like she can turn around and start dating someone else. Her husband just died days ago. So
right.
I think she's blinded by desperation. And
that's a good
Harry
point.
Dean
yeah,
Stanton
sure. Desperation. Yeah, yeah.
sells
yeah.
her this beautiful life of the army, and she thinks it's the way to go. And for her, it's the complete opposite of what she needs. But I guess in a way, she did need it, so it did work out.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll go with that, and I totally agree. She's completely desperate. Absolutely, 100%. I just didn't know why she was in a hotel room. For some reason,
I think she just wanted to get away from everybody because that one scene.
Yeah, that's
when
a good point.
The
too.
Morning.
That's, yeah, right. They're all coming to her, and she just wants to be alone. Yeah, okay, all right.
And I think she's just like, enough is enough. I need to get away from all
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you turned me around on that. That they do set it up properly. I guess that does make sense. And again, this is a comedy, so it's supposed to be a little bit ridiculous with the call-in radio show and. This next scene. So, but then that goes right into my next question / complaint is that we have Harry Dean Stanton as recruitment officer Jim Ballard. And my question is, he speaks to her on the call-in radio show, but then meets her outside of the Army recruitment office and then takes her inside and sells her this false bill of goods. Basically, it's false advertising telling her that she's probably going to end up like in the Club Med of Army bases, that there'll be yachts and private rooms, etc. And she buys it, and that's why she joins up. But my question is, what is his agenda in recruiting her, though? Just to fill a quota? And why, what's his play here? Why would he go through, and he doesn't, and Harry Dean Stanton, who I absolutely love, doesn't play the comedy in this scene. He's pretty straight-laced and straight-faced and straightforward in it. So I was a little confused as to what his agenda was.
I actually did think about this because first I was like, I can't believe here he is listening to call-in shows to try to
right. yeah.
con people into joining the military. And then how did they let him do that? It's like, that's how you're recruiting people and the army was allowing that. And why are they so desperate? But you have to remember, this is a couple of years after Vietnam when everyone at this point is anti-military. So I'm sure the numbers for our services were not that great. So they needed to get people in there. And it might have been do what you can to get people to sign up because we're not doing the draft anymore. Everyone's pissed off about what happened at Vietnam. They don't trust us. Just get them in. I think it's just a sign mm-hmm. of the times. It seems weird
yeah,
now,
okay.
but I think I was trying to put it in that perspective. I'm like, like I said, I was 8 years old, so I don't know how they were recruiting people into the military back then, but that probably was not allowed. That's hopefully an exaggeration of what was happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that time, they needed to do what they can to get people to believe in the military again and sign up.
I think that's correct. That makes sense, and that's logical. It's 100%. I think that's probably the reasoning behind it. It still feels weird in the movie. It's amusing that she falls for it because the way he lays it out is so kind of matter of factly like, yeah, this is the new army and you're going to love it. and there's he'll have a job, and he really sells it.
Yes,
he really does. But it's just such a line of bullshit that it's just so ridiculous that I was like, how is this okay? I guess is
right. That was my issue too. How is this okay? Yeah, I agree with that. I was like, how is this okay that they could do that?
And these are nitpicky complaints. Like, I'm really looking into it. Like, I'm reading into it a little bit purposely too much. It doesn't matter to me that much. It didn't bother me that much. I'm just trying to find some content here to talk about. But yeah, I was just wondering what was going on there. What do you have for a complaint?
First one I found kind of odd, because I think I had a Mandela effect about this too, was the shower prank on Captain Lewis, where they literally put the ink in the shower head itself. And then she gets in the shower to take a shower and then is sprayed in this ink. And I was thinking, there's no way that would work. I mean, when you take a shower, do you get in right away with the water? Don't you leave it running for a couple seconds?
No.
Stick your hand under to see if it's the right temperature, and then you step in. I don't know anybody that does it that way, where they let the water run in the faucet part and then switch it over while they're standing into it.
They choreographed it to make it work, and it's not right. That totally stood out to me as well. It's like nobody gets into a shower that
right. way. So when she was bringing the stuff in, I was like, oh, this must be when they sabotaged the shampoo or something. Not the actual shower.
Not the shower head.
Yeah.
Because she actually removes the shower head, puts in the ink or the food dye coloring, whatever it is. And then, yeah.
Yeah, because even the way goes to reach for the soap, and then notices her covered in ink. And I love when she screams and like all that blue comes out of her nose. I was like, oh my God, that's gross. But you don't do that either. It's a shame because result's kind of funny, but the execution of it really bothered me. Nothing works as well as Police Academy 2 when they put the crazy glue. They swap the shampoo bottle to crazy glue.
God.
And then because that would make sense, because he's lathered himself up. He doesn't notice that the shampoo's been switched out. And then pours it in his hair, like, okay. So I would have thought they would have done the same thing here or something different, or waited till the water started running and then somehow like got the ink in. I don't know.
It does look great when she looks into the mirror, though, and it's all over her face. And like you said, it's running out of her nose. It's like, how many times did they do that? I wonder how many takes that took to get right.
That was scary looking.
But good call. Good call. Another little complaint I had was just the fact that Craig T. Nelson is criminally underused in this. But I think he was still, he's still newer on the scene. This is only 1980. It's not like they're going to give him probably a huge part in this. But there's some awkwardness here where he's supposed to be this playboy. And we know that he hooks up with Captain Lewis. And then we see during the war games, actually, he finds time to hook up with Private Wanda Winters and... When they get busted, when he gets busted with the private, they throw him into the back of an army truck and then pull them out like half naked. And there's like a simple, sticky, goofy moment where he, in his embarrassment, crawls underneath the truck and starts trying to kick up dirt on top of himself as if that will hide him.
Yeah, I know.
From everyone's view. And it's such a weirdly awkward, choreographed moment. Where it's like, oh, poor Craig T. just didn't have a lot to
do. I was like, what are you, a turtle? You're burying your eggs right now? What's going on?
And it's, again, over the top, silly, ridiculous. This is one thing, but we don't really care about his character that much. And it was just weird that he did that. It's like, I don't understand. Sometimes we think about it this way. It's like being there on location and the director going, okay, I think this would be hilarious if you're so embarrassed. And you want to hide your shame and you just want to hide from view, just dive underneath the truck and start trying to cover yourself with dirt as if that's going to, I don't know. It's just like, what?
Yeah. I think it would have been different if he was naked, but he had his boxers on.
Yeah.
Whatever. I agree. I thought that was kind of dumb too. I was like, what are you doing? All right. I have to talk about Henri's weak goal in that soccer scene. That was bad.
I mean
he's a better player than Michael Caine in Victory. I don't know if that's saying much.
That's a wonderful comparison, and you are spot on. I love the fact, Bill Bant, that you pick these small moments that register with me completely 100%, and they're in the back of my mind, but I don't think to actually put them in my complaints because they just can go by so quickly. It's just like a simple move that a character does here, or a motion, or getting into the bathtub or shower, or in this moment, you know, kicking the soccer goal, because it doesn't matter. We're just watching him play soccer. It's like, okay, here's a little interstitial scene or whatever it is. But you're absolutely right. It's a weak ass goal that he kicks. Like he doesn't even kick it properly. It seems.
Is
it, like, I played soccer. I know a little bit about the sport, and he looks good in his uniform. He looks good dribbling the ball.
Yeah,
and then
he
all
looks
of a sudden
like a player.
It comes time to completely. He looks great. And then he goes to shoot the ball, and it's like a dribbler that goes into the net. Like, what happened there? Get another shot. Get another take of that.
Yeah.
Let's get it right.
Let's bust it.
You're Armand Desante. Need a strong goal here. That's funny.
Anything else?
Just lastly, again, I always say this. This is an expression I steal from my acting instructor, Ken Lerner, when I say they missed a bet here with Eileen Brennan's character, because I thought it was cool when she reappears in Paris. It's like, dun, dun, dun. Oh, we think that Private Benjamin has now gotten the ideal post in Paris, where now she's going to find Henri and hook up with him, and she can work there and enjoy her life in, you know, beautiful Paris. And then who's also posted there, because we didn't know where Captain Lewis was going when she got reassigned from Biloxi, but she is also in Paris. We're like, oh, and I'm like, okay, she's going to make Private Benjamin's life hell. And now this will be the real obstacle here, is how is Benjamin going to get over this and get past Captain Lewis again? But it just doesn't come to fruition. Captain Lewis ends up finding out that Benjamin's new boyfriend, Henri, is supposedly a communist, and then gets Benjamin to resign, basically, to leave the army and become what she wanted to be anyway, like a housewife. But anyway, it was just like, oh, this, I thought it was going somewhere and it didn't. And it was just, it could have been more of the, like you said initially, Bill Bant, more army stuff in this, more let's keep Private Benjamin within the army and watch her rise through the ranks and find her place. She finds her purpose and her independence and her strength in this job, and she finds something she's good at, and that's something she can profit from, but finds value in, and can be of service in this role. But she's finding these roadblocks through superiors, especially Captain Lewis, or even another male. Like, for instance, we get the whole sequence earlier with Colonel Thornbush, who ends up attempts to rape her
right
on the airplane
when they're last
jumping. And yeah, it's really, that's, see where I'm saying they insert these sexual scenes that are very uncomfortable. And I understand in that particular sequence why they do it, but it's like, well, why there? Why at that point in the movie? And is that necessary for her to endure that? I understand how it propels the story forward, because then he's embarrassed by the situation because she gets out of it. She jumps out of the plane, and that gives her strength because she managed to do that. And then because he's embarrassed by the sequence, he gives her whatever post she wants, and that's how she ends up in Paris. So that makes sense. But if it would have been a male superior officer at her post in Paris, that becomes a real obstacle. Maybe that would have been a stronger choice. I don't know. I would have liked to have seen more Eileen Brennan. I wished she had more to do in that third act.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's my final complaint, is what happened to the comedy. There's really no comedy once
right
we have her leave.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
These, what do they call this? The thorn birds.
Yes.
It's like the only two jokes they try is Private Benjamin, because of her new position. She's working for a Turkish commander who has a funny accent, and she accidentally mimics his accent. And then we have Eileen Brennan, who's with a female officer, and she kind of mimics her accent. And that's it. There's really no other jokes for the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Right. It's a weird choice. It's a weird direction to go in.
It really feels like two different movies.
Yeah, that is the biggest complaint.
Yeah.
There's just no question about it. It's pretty obvious. And it's not as if Armand Desante can't play comedy.
Right.
Because watch Fatal Instinct. Right? It's a freaking parody of Fatal Attraction and Basic Instinct. And he's hilarious in it. Weird stuff. Okay.
let's move on to, hey, it's that actor. So in this segment, we spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films, an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. It's Hey, It's That Actor. Who do we choose this week?
This week for Hey, It's That Actor, we're going with PJ Souls as Private Wanda Winter. And it is Winter, singular. I was just looking at the cast list. I wanted to say Wanda Winters.
It sounds
either
better.
Way, kind of a cool name, Wanda Winter. Sounds like a Marvel superhero name.
It does.
I know we have a Wanda, we have a, already a Wanda in that universe. We love PJ Souls, but I saw her. I recognized her. I do know her name. I don't know if she's a household name, but she is recognizable. So I figured she is a Hey, It's That Actor or actress, if you will. And here's a little bit from Wikipedia. PJ stands for Pamela Jane. So Pamela Jane Souls, we know, is an American actress. She made her film debut in 1976 as Norma Watson in Brian De Palma's Carrie. And then that was actually before she portrayed Linda Vanderklok in John Carpenter's Halloween. She was also in Rock and Roll High School in 79. Not bad for the late 70s. She had back-to-back-to-back movies that were, at the very least, cult classics, if not more. So she has since appeared in many films, including Breaking Away, This Private Benjamin. Then she was in Stripes, which we covered on this podcast. And we talked about, that was one of my favorite scenes, actually. Had her and Bill Murray in it when they're flirting with one another in the kitchen, I believe. Yep. She was also in Sweet Dreams and Jawbreaker and cult classics like The Devil's Rejects in 2005 and Beg in 2011. And she is and has been regarded as a scream queen. She went on then to play the role of teacher in the reboot of Halloween in 2018. Here's a little trivia about PJ Souls. She did her screen test for the horror movie Carrie with John Travolta. He loved her performance so much, he made sure she got a role in his television movie, The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. Also, John Carpenter wanted her for his horror movie Halloween after seeing the horror movie Carrie. He wrote the role of Linda Vanderklok, especially for her because of the way she said the word totally. How about that? She was ranked number 4. On Maxim Magazine's Hottest Women of Horror Movies list. There you go. PJ Souls, our Hey, It's That Actor, this week.
Yeah, she had a nice 6-year, 7-year run there. And then...
Absolutely.
It's kind of like, what happened to her? I always liked everything she's been in.
Yeah, she did some stuff in the 2000s, as I mentioned. But yeah, check her out. I mean...
I didn't like that wig, though. That's for sure.
No. And there is something in the trivia about that. I don't know if you came across that, but
we'll
step on it a little bit. Okay, good. No, you go ahead. If you have it, I don't know if I included it in my choices for trivia, but if you have it.
I'll just say it right now, and then we can just jump into facts and trivia. But yes, Goldie Hawn did not want any other blondes in this film. So when PJ Souls, who's I think she's a natural blonde, but she usually plays blonde in other movies, she auditioned in a wig. Just so she could get the part, and then she did, and then she had to keep that wig on throughout the film.
Yeah,
it's terrible, terrible.
It's too bad because she's an attractive woman. She's very cute.
Yeah,
the wig didn't do her any favors.
No. So speaking of facts and trivia, let's move on to facts and trivia. What do we have for facts and trivia about Private Benjamin?
Well, this was the first film as a producer for actress Goldie Hawn, and Hawn said of this in the biography, Pure Goldie, The Life and Times of Goldie Hawn by Mark Shapiro. I didn't plan on becoming a producer. I only wanted to create better roles for myself, and I love the idea of Private Benjamin so much that I felt it would be the perfect opportunity to finally control my own destiny. I think that's, a little bit of maybe art imitating life, life imitating art, right?
Yeah.
Control my own destiny. Okay. What do you got?
So the poster advertising the movie, which is kind of iconic because you talked about it earlier, is the wet Private Benjamin with the mascara tearing and it's a close up on her face and she's got that look that was designed to parody the 1930 Best Picture classic war movie, All Quiet on the Western Front, which is it's a male
right
on the poster. But it's almost basically the same. It's just close up. With the helmet and everything. So Nice job with that.
Absolutely. Speaking of All Quiet on the Western Front, did you see the most recent iteration of that, with the Academy Award winning?
I have not seen any of them.
International film?
I have not seen any of them.
Okay. I would at some point like to see the latest version, which is supposed to be excellent, obviously. Yeah. I think it won Best International Film. Anyway, I wanted to give a shout out here to Nancy Myers, who is writer, producer, and director herself. She was one of the writers on this film. Also, she worked on this, Private Benjamin. And if you know a little bit about the rest of her work, you can probably pinpoint where she had influence on this particular film. But she would go on to be involved in Jumpin' Jack Flash, Baby Boom, Father of the Bride, Father of the Bride 2, the remake of The Parent Trap, Something's Gotta Give, The Holiday, and It's Complicated. Nancy Myers, very talented, and I know the ladies out there are a big fan of her work and the romantic comedies she's worked on, and a lot of the set dressing, if you will, the houses she chooses, and yeah, a lot of the set deck and production design she does that she has on her movies. So just shouting out Nancy Myers, writer.
Yeah, I think there must have been something with the editing, because there must have been a longer cut of this, because like the scenes that took the time to play out, especially the scenes with Benjamin and Captain Lewis, I thought worked great. But then, and then there's even that campfire scene when all the ladies who were supposed to be guarding the swamp and they have the discussion about orgasms and stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, it's uncomfortable for a guy watching this, but it's actually a good scene. But I wanted to know more about the ladies going into that. So I'm like, did she write that stuff and it just didn't make it for time, or they just cut it out?
Right.
So there's, yeah.
Yeah, because there's three writers on the movie.
Yeah.
And Nancy Myers is one of them. That's where I'm like, you can probably see where she had some influence. But I agree, the supporting characters needed a little more backstory. Mm-hmm. Or something just to give them a fuller life. You don't need to go delve heavily into their backstory. But you know what I mean? Just make them a little more well-rounded to make those scenes have a little more impact where they're all together.
Yeah. All right, this is a little obscure, but I'd like doing a little diving into this one. So if the actor playing Mr. Waxman looked familiar to you, which was the gentleman in the wedding scene that upholstered the ottoman for Judy, that is Lee Wallace, and he bears an uncanny resemblance to former New York City Mayor Ed Koch. That must have benefited him as an actor, since he played a mayor three times in movies. So he played the mayor of New York City twice, once in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the 1974 version, and in the movie Daniel from 1983. And then he was the mayor of Gotham City in Batman in 1989.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's cool. Yeah, absolutely.
If you find a picture of Lee Wallace and Ed Koch when he was mayor from, I think it was like the late 70s to 88 or 89, you would think the two of them mm-hmm. were twin brothers.
That's great. This is kind of funny. Goldie Hawn once said of the basic training preparation she went through in preparation for this film in the biography, once again, Pure Goldie, The Life and Times of Goldie Hawn, quote, "After going through basic training, I would not resist the draft, provided, of course, I could have a stunt double at all times." I thought that was funny.
So we'll get into this box office, but this movie was a hit. So trying to capitalize on the success of Private Benjamin, ABC aired in 1981 a TV movie called She's in the Army Now, which was originally a TV pilot, but never got off the ground. Listen to this cast, Jason. Jamie Lee Curtis, Melanie Griffith, Kathleen Quinlan, and Steve Bauer. And it also had Demita Jo Freeman, who played Private Mo from Private Benjamin in it.
Wow. How about that?
I have to go back and find this one.
Pretty strong.
Yeah.
Like all those actors, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of which, people may know this already, but that this movie did spur the successful short-lived TV series Private Benjamin, same title, which aired between 81 and 83.
Yeah, and that brought back a lot of cast members from the movie that were in the show. And doing the deep dive into it, the only reason the show was canceled was because Eileen Brennan got in a car accident. But not car accident, she got hit by a car. During the end of the second season, so she couldn't complete it. And because the ratings were okay, and she had been nominated for an Emmy, she won an Emmy for the show and then was nominated again. Yeah. And when they realized she wasn't coming back to the show, they just axed the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
I do remember that show.
Yeah, I don't have any recollection. Yeah, yeah. But
and then Benjamin was, I can't remember the name of the actress, but she was the, she was an airplane. She was the one that was singing with a guitar for the girl that was getting the transplant. And then she accidentally pulls out her her medication.
Right, yeah. Right. I have to look that up. Gotcha. That's funny.
Yeah, that show actually could have been on a little bit longer if it wasn't for Eileen Brennan's unfortunate accident.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to box office. So Private Benjamin was released on October 10th in 1980 in 763 theaters. On an estimated budget of $10 million, it grossed $69.8 million domestically. It debuted number one at the box office and would be the sixth highest grossing movie of 1980 here in the United States, just behind Clint Eastwood's Any Which Way You Can. Moving on to reviews. When growing up in the 80s, we would watch sneak previews with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert to hear their reviews and watch clips of upcoming movies. Their review of Private Benjamin was unanimous. Two thumbs up. Gene thought the movie was mostly a delight, with Goldie Hawn displaying a marvelous comic flair with a script full of great writing. Roger agreed and thought Goldie Hawn created a great character in Judy Benjamin. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a tomato meter score of 83% with an audience score of 60%. It also has an IMDb rating of 6.2. So that takes us to additional thoughts and questions. What are some additional thoughts and questions we have about Private Benjamin?
Well, here's the obvious one. I'll just get this out of the way now is, do you have a favorite basic training movie? I know you've listed many of them already. We have this Private Benjamin. There's Taps, Stripes, Up the Academy, The Lords of Discipline, Officer and Gentleman, Biloxi Blues, Heartbreak Ridge, you mentioned, Full Metal Jacket, you mentioned as well, Cadence, that one I'm not familiar with. There's a bunch of them.
Is that with the Charlie Sheen?
Might be, I don't know.
That's a fun one. Man, I mean, for comedy, yeah, it's always Stripes, but I think, see, this is what Private Ben, Officer and a Gentleman, because it does take you through the whole training. And then at the end, then you have the conclusion with Richard Gere running off with Deborah Winger.
Mm-hmm.
See, Private Benjamin kind of did that first.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'd go. Yeah, I mean, Stripes and probably Officer and Gentleman for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's comedy and drama, obviously. Mm-hmm. Two different genres. Yeah. But it's true. I think most of those still suffer from outside. Officer and Gentleman's pretty solid.
Yeah,
it is. I don't know if that suffers from, you know, but yeah, you nailed it earlier saying a handful of those. Like, I mean, Full Metal Jacket is also a classic example of, I mean, it literally is two different movies.
Right. And yeah, that opening is so intense.
That's the
and
thing.
And that's the thing. You can't carry it into. I still like the movie overall as a whole.
Yes, I do too.
Too many people kill the second half of the movie. I still think it's really good. But yeah, that basic training cannot reach that high again throughout the rest of the movie. That's just.
It's such a tremendous gut punch.
Yes, I agree.
Vincent D'Onofrio, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And he gives Stanley Kubrick so much credit for his career, too, mm-hmm. because of that role. I've got some other thoughts and questions. Did you want to mention one of yours?
Yeah. So there's this moment in the second half of the movie when Lewis, you know, presents to Benjamin that Henri is communist and she has to either stay or go. And then we see Lewis later on with that other female officer, and it almost implies that she's possibly gay. And
totally does.
I was like, wow, is that kind of ironic? Because back then, no gays in the military. So here's Lewis wanting to throw out Benjamin for being with a commie, but Lewis is possibly gay.
Yeah, that's what it insinuates. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I was like, are they insinuating
that?
You
could say this movie is a little edgy in that way, I guess. I don't know, for its time, 1980.
I did kind of like that irony.
Mm.
But I wanted to make sure, I'm like, are they implying that Lewis is gay now? I don't know.
Yeah, I just wonder, again, like I have this in my additional thoughts and questions. This movie just feels like it could have been restructured to really work. And it's like, can we just chalk it up to the fact that this is Nancy Meyer's first time writing for film? And that there were too many writers, too many cooks in the kitchen.
But then it gets nominated.
Or it's I have issues with the screenplay story, but
that's why I want to.
A lot of people didn't.
Yeah,
it's interesting reading the reviews, especially on Wikipedia, because it seems to be split down the middle.
Yeah, I'm like, I want maybe not the shooting draft, but maybe like three drafts before that one to see what got taken out of this.
Yeah, or it's as if the three writers wrote three separate drafts, and then director, producer, whomever, just took pieces from each and, like you said it perfectly earlier, stitched them together.
Yeah, you got 1 through 40, you got 41 through 80, and then right. You got 81 through 120.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got?
Bill Bant, have you ever had any thoughts about enlisting yourself, about joining the armed forces?
Never.
No thought whatsoever?
No. And I remember, I think I've told this story before, when I was with the Dolphins, and this was during 9/11, and they had us go to a recruitment office.
Mm-hmm. You did tell. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
And just seeing all those kids, it was for the Air Force, I think. And just seeing all those kids in there and being sworn in. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh my God, how many of these kids are going to make it?
Yeah. I remember you mentioning that they were babies. They were just babies. Yeah.
And I was only in my late 20s myself at the time. So,
right,
man. Yeah. That really,
It's interesting. Growing up, I never really had any passion or urge to join the armed forces. There's a part of me that felt maybe it was my duty to serve, but that was in great part due to my dad being in the Air Force, and he felt that every United States citizen should serve their time in the armed forces. He felt it should be four years, but I thought maybe 2 years would suffice, but I understood that from his perspective, but that was just never something I really wanted to do. I mean, I've always wanted to be involved in movies in some way, shape, or form. But yeah, you know, funny enough, moving out to LA, I really was the embodiment of the actor cliche in waiting tables, etc. And then after being in customer service for so long, I changed that whole thing around. I feel like people should be in customer service and like every United States citizen should serve their time in customer service for at least 4 years.
There you go. Yeah, I think it's just like anything. Not everybody's cut out for it. And those who serve, hats off to you. I appreciate it.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't say enough about that. The people who fight for our freedom every day and are ready if anything happens. It's just not me. I mean, you know, if I was called in to do something, yeah, of course, you know, I would do it. But
sure. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember doing that. I think when I was it turned 18 or 16, when you had to drop off your paperwork in case they instituted the draft again that you had to turn in. I think I'd go to my local library and drop it off or something. I remember my mom being upset. She's like, oh, crap. Hopefully nothing happens within the next 5 years. But then, yeah, we did have the Gulf War at that point when we were in college. So.
Yeah,
there's always a chance we could have got called in for that one if they decide to bring the draft back.
Yeah. All right. Did you have anything else? Thoughts? Questions?
Yeah. Last question. So what do you think Judy did after walking out of the wedding? Because we have our classic.
Yeah.
She leaves the house and she's walking down the dirt road and the credits are rolling and leaves her friends, leaves her parents there, leaves her fiance, which was the right move. Of course, I'm glad that she did do that.
But he was a douchebag.
But what's next for Judy Benjamin? What do you think?
I thought she was just finding her place in the Army. I don't know if that's where her passion lied. I don't know if do we know enough about her to kind of, I mean, we can just kind of guess that she would find her own way in Paris, maybe stay in Europe.
I was going to ask that. Do you think she even goes back to the U.S.?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either now.
I think she really starts a brand new life. I think she's found herself in the way that she, at least she's got some life experience now and has some skills. Clearly, she could easily find a job somewhere. She may have to start, maybe it's a clerical position or something like that, but it's still quite respectable, could make a living, find an apartment somewhere outside of Paris still or wherever she wanted, but yeah, start anew.
Think she finds husband number three? Three's the charm?
Do I think she... I don't... I think much later in life.
Okay.
I think she waits. I think she really puts on the brakes. Maybe she gets a little therapy. Maybe she learns how to set some boundaries and really do some self-analysis in thinking about why she chooses these particular men. And then decides to... Yeah, she just spends this time not only... being independent, but also to work on herself. And then when she knows that she can be okay on her own, then maybe she entertains finding a mate, a partner.
Okay.
All right. That's the end of our show, folks. That's it.
Dun, 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 dun.
No, I've got a couple other bits of business, Bill Bant.
Go for it.
I'm watching Goldie Hawn in this movie just thinking, the actress Anna Faris has got to be her daughter some way, somehow. I totally see Anna Faris when I look at Goldie Hawn. And to no surprise, Anna Faris starred in the reboot of Overboard in 2018. However, it was a role reversal in that reboot, and Anna Faris plays the Kurt Russell role in that film. And then, in further research, I discovered before that, in March of 2010, Anna Faris was cast to portray Judy Benjamin in a Private Benjamin remake from New Line Cinema. But in May of 2014, it was confirmed that Rebel Wilson would portray Benjamin in the remake. But they never made it, correct?
Correct.
I was looking it up.
Development hell.
Yeah, that never happened. Yeah.
You know, watching this, who Goldie Hawn kind of reminded me of? Jennifer Aniston for some reason.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. I see that a little bit. That's interesting.
Like, I could have saw Jennifer Aniston in this movie.
Yeah.
The early Friends days.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of a little bit of that Daffy Daft quality.
Yeah, there's a little Rachel in there.
Yeah. She likes kind of the finer things. She likes the way she looks and not necessarily she's looking to get hitched to be able to enjoy the nicer things, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. That's a good call. That's interesting. Thinking a little bit outside the box there. I appreciate that. I got one last chunk here to discuss. It's just happens as it was really lucky that today, as I was thinking over my notes while driving along the streets of Los Angeles, I happened to come across an interview with Goldie Hawn. This is a very, very recent interview within the last couple of days, and she is awesome. There are so many stories that she has. And I immediately gained a supreme respect, if I didn't already have a supreme respect for her ability, her talent, and for who she is. She just has these incredible stories of what she's been through to get where she is. And she talked about starting off as a dancer and moving to New York City, working as a go-go girl at the World's Fair, and having to deal with a real casting couch situation, which she was strong enough to reject, escape, and rise above, and also meeting Kurt Russell for the first time, which was actually when she was auditioning as a dancer for a Disney film, and the role which she actually got was for a non-speaking role, but was credited as Giggly Girl, which, funny enough, would be pretty much what she was known for early on in her career, then being that, like, a Giggly Girl type, I mean. And then later on, she talks about becoming a producer and becoming a producer then on Swing Shift and how she would meet Kurt Russell once again. And when he auditioned for the film, he said to her, "I may not be right for this part, but I'd really like to see you again." And she basically fell in love with him in that moment, I guess. And you know what happens after that. But also she talks about her care for her family and kids and how Kurt Russell really just shared that in common. And that's really why she fell in love with him. And then she talks about her work today with kids through the Goldie Hawn Foundation and the Mind Up program, which you can check out at mindup.org, which is all about social emotional learning and creating lasting community in the classroom. Pretty great stuff. She's an amazing woman. So really lucky to have happened to listen to that interview today when we were about to record this podcast this evening. She's pretty awesome.
Ah,
so
great timing. Yeah, and I was thinking about that too, watching this movie and then just doing the research. I thought she would have had a bigger filmography. I thought she would have done more.
It's interesting you bring that up, because when I was looking over her IMDb, I thought the same thing. But she's had quite the impact.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless. But yeah, it's not as if she's... I mean, she has an extensive filmography, but you just would assume she had been in so much more.
Right, exactly. As popular as she is, you would think right. It would be... It's like, oh my God, she's got like 800 movies. But no, it's very... It almost seems like she did one every other year, sometimes once every 3 years. So I was surprised by that.
All right.
Anything else for additional thoughts and questions?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay, let's move on to our rating. So Jason, on a scale of 1 to 5 red armbands, what do you give Private Benjamin?
I love it. I'm going to give it 3 red armbands. You know what? If I'm totally honest, I was thinking about giving it 2.5 only because I'm just not crazy about this movie. But if it weren't for Goldie Hawn, I would have given it 2.5 is what I'm saying. But because this is all Goldie Hawn, it's 3 armbands for me, red armbands. But let's not forget Eileen Brennan. She is also a star in this movie. So let's put them together. And that lifts it to 3 red armbands for me. But back to Goldie Hawn. She's great. She's adorable. She's sympathetic in this. She's pitiful. She's bubbly. She's hilarious. She's goofy. She's attractive. And just so talented in regards to her comedic delivery, timing, and physicality. But yeah, the movie is a bit flimsy and whimsical. It just doesn't carry a lot of weight. The pieces are there, as we've mentioned. The message is there. There's a positive message in here. There is an arc for Private Benjamin, but it was just a little empty for me. It is the tale of 2 movies, and honestly, it's just not quite as funny as I was wanting it to be. Maybe that's a me problem in my own taste. I think the supporting characters are underwritten, but as my friend Bill Bant pointed out, yes, it is a tale of 2 movies. I'm sounding redundant here, so I'll get to it here. It's just the second half doesn't capitalize on the foundation that the first half builds. It's not as fun. So it's fine. It's fine. It's fun. It's worth seeing still just for Goldie Hawn and Eileen Brennan. That's all I'll say is, Goldie Hawn is clearly, you can see if I can see myself as a kid watching this going, oh, wow, this woman, Goldie Hawn, she's a star. She's a pleasure to watch. 3 red armbands for me, Bill Bant. What say you?
I guess you're giving it like 3 bad red armbands because I'm giving it 3 good red armbands.
All right.
And good. Me, it's good. More for...
End on a positive note.
Eileen Brennan.
All right.
She just cracked me up that first half of the movie. Yeah, the big issue with that is outside of those two, everybody else is kind of underdeveloped. The story takes a weird turn in that third act, but it does finish Private Benjamin's arc, which we need it from the beginning. She finds her inner strength. She, you know, empowers herself. So I do appreciate all that. I just wish they did it a different way. I can't believe it was such a big hit in 1980. And, you know, even here, Siskel and Ebert saying how funny it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think there's that many laughs in it, but I was surprised how fast that film goes by. If I could have tacked on another 20 minutes just to bring in the secondary characters a little bit more, you know, get some more jokes out of them, I would have been all for it. But no, I did like it. I liked it more than I thought I was going to. So I give mm-hmm. it 3 strong
good.
Red armbands.
All right. Nice. Yeah, I think this was a movie of its time for sure. I strongly believe, I can't say it enough, is that if I saw this in 1980, I think I would have been more on the positive side.
I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please take the time to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Give us a review and rate us. If you want to learn more about our show, you can visit us at all80smoviespodcast.com. For our next episode, we'll be discussing Sharky's Machine, starring Burt Reynolds and Rachel Ward. We hope you can join us. Have an excellent week, everyone.
Beware, there are minefields out there. Most of them are inert. However, some are hurt. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, world.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.